This is Mike Bernhardt for the Exascale Report. I'm here with Don Grice, IBM Distinguished Engineer and Roadrunner Chief Engineer. We're at ISC 11 in Hamburg, Germany, and we're going to talk about Exascale. So Don, back in November, IBM talked about a breakthrough in allowing chips to communicate at faster speeds using pulses of light. And it was said at the time that this photonics technology could boost processing capabilities to 1,000,000,000,000,000 calculations per second in exaflop. Has there been any substantial progress in this area, and do you still think that this could be a key factor in exascale development?
Yeah, so there are research labs for sure still working on photonics, integrated photonics. I don't know that we have anything that we have that you can demonstrate communications yet, but there's certainly the beginnings of the research. And where we think the photonics, integrated photonics, is critical is in power reduction, right? When you look at the two major drivers of data movement, it's movement into the memory and movement between the nodes on the communication network, right? And so there's a lot of work being done in the community at large trying to do the memory stacking pieces to try to get that memory movement down. But we're still thinking we have to go from electronics to optics to electronics. And the amount of power you spend just doing those transitions at exascale is significant. So it's not so much that the photonics will let things go faster inherently, because it'll still be fiber optic things, but we'll be able to get more parallel channels, and we'll be able to get the power down because you go directly to stay in optics.
Sure.
And that's really the advantage. And so we think it's a critical step to exascale. Probably will not be in the interim steps that people are doing, but when you try to do an exascale, it seems like it's a critical.
What kind of a time frame do you look at when you're into this area of research? Is this something that's 10 years out before you?
Yeah, so the way we usually look at research and development, there's the, and we call them horizons, which is probably an IBM thing, but we have the people that are doing the initial projects that are being shipped, and they think about a year in advance.
Yeah.
And then there's the sort of advanced technology, next generation people like me that look at 3 years out. And then our research people are 5 years and beyond. So the photonics people, there's several of the research labs looking at this. But it takes improvements in the actual silicon fabrication technology, right?
Okay.
So that takes longer. It takes a lot of investment. So we are working on the math and the science of all of that. But we're not into the implementation stage just yet. So I think it's at least 5 years. But we have 9 years or 8 years before we actually need it in the system. So it seems like it's on the right kind of timeline to catch the wave of the exascale.
Awesome.
When we need it.
And this would have implications far beyond exascale.
So we actually believe that all of this power reduction is not just an exascale problem.
Yeah. Right?
It's a data center problem. It's even a laptop problem. It's a games console problem. So everybody needs to get the cost of computing down.
Yeah.
And these are just ways that are driven by the extreme scale, but I think they have to trickle down into everything we're doing.
And is in dealing in this area of photonics, is this something that is primarily a research agenda driven by IBM, or is this something that might be acquisition of technology?
So the current work is being done by IBM. It's been done by IBM research in Zurich and in Hawthorne. We are looking at it intrinsically as science. Now, whether it becomes something we then spin off, that's something down the road. We're just trying to figure out how to get there. We think we're actually ahead. So in terms of would we buy in the technology, that doesn't look like the way it would go. We would develop it and then figure out what the right business to be in after that.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the Exascale Research Labs at IBM?
Yeah, so we actually, it's a joint research and development program. And so there are some of the development labs actually involved in Poughkeepsie and in Austin and in Rochester. And then we have our research labs in Almaden and in Yorktown and Hawthorne and in Zurich, at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some of the other research labs around the world. I don't know how many we have worldwide. It must be 15 or 18 research labs.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they're, how many of them are indirectly involved, it's a little hard to tell because we're actually looking at this exascale thing as a complete science transformation, right? So there's a lot of software work being done.
Yeah.
We actually think the software work is as critical as the hardware work. It has as big a lead time, if not more of a lead time, from the users, right?
Sure.
So we are trying to be very careful that we hit our power requirements without disrupting the flow of the software development. So a lot of our software development labs in terms of languages, Haifa I'm sure is involved, and India is probably involved, and China is involved. So it's spread out. That's why I didn't know how to count people, right?
Yeah,
we're
sure.
doing all aspects of computing because you need to push on all of the buttons to make this target. You can't just say, let's make a faster CPU.
Okay. So I think I have a picture of that then. I mean, it's not... Do you have dedicated exascale research labs as part of the whole structure?
So we would never call one of our labs a dedicated exascale lab.
Okay.
But we have departments, like in Yorktown.
Yeah.
There are whole departments in Yorktown working on exascale technology.
Gotcha. So,
but the Yorktown Research Lab is a much bigger...
So it's many more resources to bring to bear on it, which is...
Yes. We're trying to figure out how to get everybody involved, and most of it is part-time at the moment because of its scale. But but there's a lot of activity and a lot of coordination of, as I said, on these various fronts. So so the packaging guys and the photonics guys sort of have the highest lead time physics, so they are probably ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But we need something near-term to follow on to BlueGene. So we're doing...
Right.
So what do you need to do next? As you said, you would like to see some little path.
Yes.
And not just say, well, in 10 years, just wait and it'll happen. Right?
Exactly.
And that's where our software focus, I think, is critical. Because we have a lot of the changes we think that need to be done to the system are actually implemented in the middleware on BlueGene.
Okay.
So most of the new transformation that the applications will see are already sort of visible.
Gotcha.
And that'll give them a leg up on how to deal with it and how to deal with power requirements. We're putting in for energy in all of our job schedulers now. We have power-aware scheduling because power is a big deal. And so we have throttling. We have reports that come out. How much energy did you use? Nobody ever would have looked at that.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not how many CPU cycles did you use. It's how many watts did you use.
That's awesome.
And some of the facilities are thinking of charging by the watt and not by the CPU cycle. Because this transformation has to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm glad to hear that. This is really encouraging, actually.
Yeah.
So that kind of leads into the next topic, which is co-design. Everybody has said, since the beginning of these discussions, not only do we need strong international collaboration, but we need co-design efforts. Mm-hmm. What's IBM's perspective on co-design? Do you have any initiatives in place now?
Well, so co-design itself has a bunch of issues that the world is trying to sort out. So philosophically, we clearly believe in co-design. Internally, we do all kinds of work with hardware and software and middleware people with performance. We've always done that. We work with our partners under NDA, where the co-design strategy is currently being a little rocky is how do you do this co-design and still have people keep the intellectual property? Because if you have people that are trying to make money cooperating with each other, it gets to be very tricky. And so these walls of how do you keep information from flowing, I think is currently one of the biggest impediments for getting this working. Philosophically, I think everybody believes it's absolutely required, but we don't quite know how to get it started.
Okay. So it's really going to come down to money or licensing issues or intellectual property rights. And that could take years, right?
So in the meantime, I think what's happening is a sort of movement in that direction, but people will work with their NDA partners. Right? So there'll be where it gets to be a little trickier is sharing intellectual property between money-making organizations trying to share a common piece.
Yeah.
So you need to all sort of agree that there's a community thing that you'll work on, but if anybody thinks they have a value add, it's a little hard to figure out how to discuss it in public.
That's a good point.
Right, and that's really the issue. And so there's been a lot of discussion of, well, can't you take some of these experts and just have them firewall their brain?
Yeah.
And that's very difficult, even just trying to think about it. So that's the real issue, is resources that can stay on both sides of firewalls. Because some of these firewalls need to be three and four dimensions, right? It's not just...
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, the stumbling block we're wrestling with. Not the philosophy. I think everybody believes it all has to work together.
Okay. So as far as owning the responsibility for IBM's direction in terms of co-design, where does that fall?
who owns the responsibility. So
is Exascale owned by a particular group at IBM?
So it's a joint research and development activity. And I guess you've talked to Dave. Dave is currently the customer-facing agency person for Exascale. Mm-hmm. And on the research side, I'm the technical interface for Exascale.
Okay.
So
you own it.
So I own the I own the technical part from the development piece, right?
Okay, very
but,
good.
But clearly, this is a joint effort with research. I mean, there's so many pieces that, and it's been that way for 3 years. I spent most of my career moving things from research to development.
Yeah, okay.
The first one I did was the SP back in the 90s.
Yeah.
I took the thing from research, and the SP became pretty successful.
Yeah.
Then we did it with Roadrunner the same way. We took research things. And
So
this is just the next one of the things with my friends.
There you go.
So, just bigger. So there's been concerted effort on looking at the practicality and the marketing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real effort, but it's still in the sort of formative phase. So most of the people that are wanted are part-timer people rather than full-time people. But there's a skill, I mean, the complete skill level is involved because we're up to the point where we're going to start having to build chips, right?
And
so people are looking at design rules and all the nitty-gritty of actually building chips.
Okay. I hadn't kind of prepped you to talk about this in advance, but how about BlueJean? I should know this, but I don't. Is there a next architecture defined, or does BlueJean just keep evolving?
Well, so the way we talk about it or think about it is that BlueJean as a structure had a lot of attributes that follow the Exascale rules of energy efficiency and all that kind of thing. Where we would see Exascale fitting is actually the next generation of BlueJeans.
Okay.
Because that's the kind of roadmap. It's the people that know how to do scale-out codes that would do this. So we wouldn't expect to see a BlueJean and an Exascale.
Right.
Now, if the funding is funny, you might see serially the two of them, but if we do this, it's the BlueJean replacement for the customer.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, a topic that I'm particularly interested in would be compilers.
Mm-hmm.
So we move into, you know, down the road. It's a critical component, but I guess I'm having a problem nailing down what people are doing in terms of actual compiler development to handle exascale levels of computation. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I don't think the issue is actually the exascale piece, right? The compiler actually doesn't see that part. Where we're running into issues in languages and compilers is just the intrinsic complexity of the algorithms, right? So if you think about an exascale system, it's got an order of a billion threads.
Yeah.
And so to develop a structure where human beings can actually think about the billion threads, we think means you have to raise somehow the level of abstraction that the application people are looking at. And so the real question is, at the node level, how do you find the parallelism that's in there? Do you make the users explicitly put it in? Or do you put in post-processors or just in the compiler to try to find the parallelism? And most of the language exploration is in the area of how does somebody put down on paper what's supposed to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to think of the compilers as being the group that would do this, but there's also been a lot of directives put into places. And language constructs that don't compile, they just give hints to things. So that's really the wrestling spot, right? Is can you count on a compiler to be magical? And I don't think the answer is yes. On the other hand, I don't think you want to take the burden off the compiler and make a human being work with a billion threads. That also doesn't work, right? It's not maintainable. So we're looking at things like the PGAS languages and other higher level shmim constructs so that you can write it and then somehow find where the parallelism is. And I've been talking to some of the advanced research application people that are looking at multi-scale physics and AMR, and they wonder, so how do I even describe it? And
Yeah.
And I said, well, you ought to describe a solution, then we'll figure out who's responsible to find it the second time. But if we don't know what it is the first time.
Okay.
So we're doing a lot of compiler research, and we continue to do that in new methods of trying to scope out things that find parallelism or find ways to shrink in the serial nature of things. We'll continue to do that. It's important, but it's not going to be the magic bullet.
Yeah, okay. All right, and then one final thing is the area of cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone the other day, you know, talking about, you know, well, we're going to achieve exascale because of cloud computing. And we've actually seen a few rebuttals written to that approach or that belief, I guess. What are your thoughts on that? Does cloud play a role when we get to exascale or in getting to exascale?
So I think exascale will play a role in cloud computing, actually.
Nice. Okay.
Because what we are looking at with the exascale initiative is trying to get giant data centers to be efficiently powered, right?
Yeah.
And so you'll have this massive set of resources that are most easily, I think, administered by some software construct, not by individual administrators. So I think it'll be the scale of the data center that will lead to people wanting to do them more abstract rather than the other way around. I think the requirement for doing big jobs won't come out of the data center.